Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. It's that one week a year when America becomes incredibly excited about a contest between two seemingly different teams as they battle to see who'll be the winner, even though it will change absolutely nothing until enough time passes so we forget how meaningless it is and can get all excited again. Oh, I'm sorry, I was reading my old copy from Election Day. We'll ask what this fight's about, plus Carl Castle remembers the time I brought him home to meet my parents.
His mom's face went down into the mashed potatoes.
We'll ask who expressed such surprise on our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. Officials in the northern Iraqi city of Kirkuk say at least 15 people were killed today in a suicide car bomb attack on the police headquarters. The BBC's Mike Woldridge reports.
Witnesses say that during the rush hour, a vehicle painted to look like a police car reached a checkpoint outside the police headquarters and the bomber detonated his explosives. But the bombing was then followed by an attempted assault by several gunmen disguised as policemen. Wearing explosive vests, throwing grenades, they were killed before they could enter the police headquarters. This was the third major attack in weeks in or near the city of Kirkuk. Such attacks are often seen as attempts to revive sectarian violence in Iraq.
The BBC's Mike Woldridge. Iran's foreign minister said today his country is open to discussing its nuclear program directly with the U.S. Ali Akbar Salehi said Vice President Biden's suggestion that the U.S. is ready was a step forward, but he is not yet formally committed to such talks. Talks begin in earnest today to build a coalition government in Israel. President Shimon Peres has asked Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to form a government. NPR's Larry Abramson reports he faces a number of obstacles.
Netanyahu is trying to keep two religious parties inside his coalition, but those parties may not be able to reach a consensus with Yair Lapid. His centrist party won 19 seats in the Israeli parliament by promising to draft more Orthodox students into the armed forces. That's something the religious parties say they can't accept. Lapid may also butt heads with the Jewish Home Party, which favors annexing large areas of Palestinian territory. Lapid's party wants to resume peace talks aimed at creating a Palestinian state. At Sunday's cabinet meeting, Netanyahu said the major challenge facing Israel is stopping Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. He said Iran has acquired new centrifuges that would speed up that process. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Jerusalem.
The Federal Trade Commission is fining a mobile app company $800,000 for collecting personal information about thousands of children without permission. NPR's Steve Henn reports.
Path was founded by a group of Facebook alums who in 2010 decided to create a social network focusing on mobile phones. Path promised its users some modicum of privacy and control in the online world, but almost exactly a year ago, it was caught downloading its users' entire address books without obtaining their consent, giving them a way to opt out, or even making it possible to delete this personal information from Path's servers. When the FTC investigated, it found that Path had illegally collected similar data from more than 3,000 kids. Path is unlikely to be forced out of business by this fine, but it has agreed to privacy reviews for the next 20 years. Steve Henn, NPR News, Silicon Valley.
This is NPR News from Washington. A funeral will be held this afternoon in Alabama for a school bus driver who was shot to death last week when he tried to stop an armed man from taking children off his bus. The suspect then kidnapped a 5-year-old boy who is still being held in an underground bunker in southeastern Alabama. The Baltimore Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers get down to business today. It's Super Bowl Sunday. NPR's Allison Keyes reports Ravens fans insist their team will beat the odds.
From the sea of purple jerseys to businessmen wearing purple ties to the Ravens flags billowing from businesses and homes, it's clear that Ravens fans like George Bell are revved up.
We're going to win this game this Sunday. I know that.
Bell is part of Ravens Roost No. 52, a fan club that also does charity work. Founder Jack Gordon says his team is playing on emotion because linebacker Ray Lewis is retiring.
These guys want to make Ray go out a Super Bowl champion, and I think they will.
You've got to look good while supporting your team, and member Marty Mabry's got that covered.
I have a long purple wig and a purple cowgirl hat and with sparklies on it.
This group is looking for a Ravens win. Allison Keys, NPR News, Washington.
He's not in the Super Bowl, but Adrian Peterson is celebrating. Last night, the Associated Press named him Most Valuable Player and Offensive Player of the Year. The Minnesota Vikings running back said it turned out that his major knee surgery was a blessing in disguise.
I accepted the challenge. It was hard at times, but I accepted that challenge. I pushed myself, and I worked extremely hard, and now I'm reaping the reward.
In both award categories, Peterson beat out Peyton Manning of the Denver Broncos. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Personal Capital, offering investment advice for the digital age and where investors can manage all their finances in one place at personalcapital.com.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kessel, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much, everybody.
Oh, you guys are too nice. We do have a really fun show for you today. We've got Mae Jemison, the first African-American woman to fly in space. She'll be joining us later to play our games. It's an amazing achievement, but let's be honest with each other. It's a lot easier to smash through the glass ceiling when you've got 800,000 pounds of rocket fuel. But first, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Diana from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hey, Diana, how are you?
I'm doing well, yeah.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, okay. You sound like, okay, I'm fine. It's like good at this moment. That's good.
I'm just really excited because this is what I wanted before I went off and moved to China for a year.
Oh, you're moving to China for a year?
I am.
So, but this is one of the things you wanted to do before you left?
Yeah, you know, bring a bit of America and NPR with me to China, that
right.
kind of thing.
You know, if you win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail, you can just have him say, she's not here, she's in China.
It's true.
Well, welcome to our show. Diana, let me introduce you to our panel today. First up, it's a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Ms. Faith Saley.
Hi, Diana.
Hi, Faith.
Next, it's the man behind Esquire's politics blog and a contributor to Grantland. It's Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Diana.
Hi, Charlie.
And lastly, a comedian and co-host of The Morning Amp on Vocalo.org, the Prince of Bronzeville, Mr. Brian Babylon.
Hey, Diana, how are you?
Well, welcome to the show, Diana. You'll start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Kessel, once again, will recreate three quotations in the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Ready to go?
Sure, yeah.
All right. Now, your first quote comes from a man named Jack Harbaugh. He was talking about when his son John decided what he wanted to do for a living.
He told us, I think I want to try coaching. His mom went face down into the mashed potatoes.
Coaching worked out, though. This weekend, John Harbaugh will be facing off against his brother Jim in what big game?
The Super Bowl?
The Super Bowl, yes! Yay! It's so exciting! It's the biggest, most important Super Bowl we've had in a year. This time, there's all this hype because the two opposing coaches are brothers, Jim and John Harbaugh. The media has been trying to come up with a nickname for the game, the Bro Bowl. The Harbowl, the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl with two teams coached by two brothers named Harbaugh. Super Bowl 47, the battle for mom's love. Is this legitimately interesting?
No,
or is this just
that they're brothers or that there's a Super Bowl?
Well,
I'll handle the first part. No, it's not interesting that they're brothers.
I find the fact that they're brothers far more interesting than the game to watch.
Oh, come on.
You are such a girl.
You know, I just want to say to all the people in Baltimore and all the people in the Bay Area, we apologize from NPR.
The other reason this game is so exciting for football fans is it will be the last game for retiring Baltimore Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis. He's had an amazing career, winning Defensive Player of the Year twice, and in the year 2000 he contributed to both a legendary defensive team and the stabbing death of two guys outside a nightclub. He says he's looking forward to his retirement so he can spend more time stabbing his family.
Stabbing his family with his deer antlers.
Exactly. This is the other thing. As Faith said, just days before the game, an article came out in Sports Illustrated suggesting that Mr. Lewis, among other athletes, had used deer antler spray, which purports to help you grow muscle as fast as a deer grows antlers. That's really the idea. Lewis responded angrily to the accusations in the media scrum there at the Super Bowl.
I'll stab you.
He pawed to the ground. Yeah, you don't want to make him angry. He pawed to the ground with his hoof and then charged the reporter who asked him about it. But here's the good thing. If the 49ers win, they get to mount Ray Lewis's head in their locker room. And he's a 10-pointer now. He's very impressive. Diana, your next quote comes from Arizona Senator John McCain.
Vamanos.
And here's President Barack Obama.
Mañana.
The president and Senator McCain were both showing off their bilingual skills this week while talking about what?
Immigration reform.
Yes, very good. Before the election, immigration reform was a dead issue because the Republicans were so opposed to it. Then Mitt Romney got exactly 6 Hispanic votes. One of those was actually just the white CEO of Taco Bell. Another was a hedge fund manager named Shapiro. Romney assumed he was Latino because his name ended in a vowel. Republicans have been falling over each other since then to prove their enthusiasm for Latinos. Sean Hannity, who had been completely opposed to what he called amnesty, on his show this week put on a sombrero, pulled out a guitar, and played traditional Latin songs like "The Girl We're Not Going to Send Back to Ipanema."
And you know what? Let me just say, at the end of the day, our friends from the north are like they like how we're like distracting on all the, you know, Mexico talk and thinking those people are, you know, border crossers. But it's those Canadians we need to watch out
really?
For.
Really? You think we're building a fence on the wrong border?
On the wrong border. Before we know it, you know, it's going to be horrible mustaches and crappy sweaters and everything's going to be a boat. It's going to be horrible.
National health care.
Yeah.
Diana, here is your last quote.
It's hard to imagine what it will be like next week when I wake and have nowhere to go. Maybe I'll go back to sleep for a change.
That was somebody who was leaving her job, or who left her job on Friday, who was finally going to get the chance to sleep in.
That would be Hillary Clinton.
Yes, Hillary Clinton. Very well done. Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State ended on Friday. To celebrate her time in office, the State Department released an impressive bunch of statistics compiled over her 4 years. Total number of countries visited, 112. Total time in transit, 2,084 hours or 86.8 days. Total frequent flyer miles, 950,000. Total text messages from Bill Clinton lying about where he was at that moment, 1,740.
Wait a minute, I know you made up the last one. Is the frequent flyer miles
yes,
true?
Yes, those are all true. Yeah.
Does she get the miles?
She is like sapphire status. She's like...
She's not flying Southwest.
She's flying the Washington Jakarta shuttle on Southwest.
Yeah.
I believe she has her own, but I think they were just saying this
she's
was as many miles.
She's zone one, though.
Yeah,
she is
pretty
one.
Much. She does, when she does fly Southwest, she gets to board first, yeah. Let me tell you.
Have you ever see those people, the way they walk on, thinking they're just better than you? Those preferred, blah, blah, customers going in, and then they go in, they're sitting down looking at you when you walk by, like, I've been here an extra 5 minutes.
Meanwhile, poor John Kerry, the new Secretary of State, as soon as he took over the job, everybody ceased to care about the Secretary of State. And in an attempt to make people notice him, John Kerry pointed out, like, hey, I'm also wearing a pantsuit. Look. I can be spunky.
There's no spark to John Kerry.
There isn't.
What is that? What is that?
I don't know. I fell asleep thinking about it.
The only time...
Carl, how did Diana do at our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Diana, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, Diana.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good luck in China.
Thank you.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org. You can find a link at our website. That's waitwait.npr.org. There you can also find out about our big simulcast cinema event on May 2nd. Wait Wait Live in a theater near you. Spoiler alert, we're even more attractive than you imagine. Am I right? Take their word for it. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Faith, Great Britain is facing an influx of immigrants, and they want to put a stop to it. What's their plan to deal with it?
Give them free British food.
Well, interestingly...
A giant shepherd's pie on the dock.
Well, do you know those ads like, you know, come to Jamaica, or those sort of tourism ads you see? This is sort of the opposite.
Right. They're showing how awful things are in Britain.
Right. They're thinking of airing ads in other countries about how much Great Britain sucks.
We...
Thank you for that.
We don't want you.
Exactly, pretty much. Great Britain is a small island, and apparently it's full. At the end of this year, a limit on immigration from Romania and Bulgaria will expire, and the government ministers in Britain are worried about a flood of immigrants, people coming to drink tea and eat scones and dress just like in Downton Abbey, just like they would expect. So why not an advertising campaign convincing people that the UK is a welfare state hellhole filled with drab people living in ugly buildings made out of their own rotted teeth? So, you know, this is in the nascent phase. They haven't rolled it out, but they're apparently thinking about it. So we have some suggestions for their slogans for their anti-tourism campaign. Come to Great Britain. 0 out of 4 dentists agree. The UK, home of Paul McCartney's band Wings.
It's horrible here. That's what's true. What does that even mean?
I don't know. This could really help out the immigration debate in the U.S., too. We could just start airing Olive Garden commercials in Mexico.
I thought it was just me. That is the worst place.
Oh,
oh my.
That bottomless salad bowl is a threat.
It is. But you know what it is? Because I'm not in Tuscany, bro, and I know it. You know?
Yeah.
You're not tricking me with the wallpaper. I'm in Skokie, man, and I know it.
Cups and cakes, cups and cakes. Oh, what good things mother makes.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive, which offers the ability to, quote, buy and manage policies with the Progressive mobile app. Learn more at progressive.com. CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And to the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Charlie Pierce, Brian Babylon, and Faith Saley. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Carl. And by the way, if you miss us during the week, you can also find us on Facebook and at twitter.com/waitwait. I, myself, am at Peter Sagal on Twitter. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Brenna from Charlottesville, Virginia.
Hey, how are things in Charlottesville?
They're great.
I'm glad to hear. Charlottesville is a beautiful town. I was there myself just recently.
Good.
Yeah, what do you do? It's like, oh, yeah, great, terrific. I'm supposed to like you now because you were here?
Yes.
Well, it's nice to have you with us, Brenna. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Brenna's topic?
My Google done broke.
High-tech media is great. You can read news on your phone or on your tablet or on your dog. Oh, no, wait, that was the drugs. But there are hidden downsides to this brave new world. Each of our panelists are going to tell you a story about a repercussion of the all-digital world that nobody saw coming. Guess the true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Yep.
First, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
Walton Wild Office Products in Algoma, Wisconsin, had been in the paper shredding business for 60 years, ever since founder Bob Walt had invented his revolutionary new feed mechanism. Their machines were the pride and joy of the town. The Algoma High School football team is called the Shredders. But now, with more and more of the business being done without any paper to shred, the demand for W&W shredders had plummeted, and the company is in danger of collapse, and with it, the whole town. But engineers found a solution in the company's past. Old Bob Walt started out working the grinder at his father's butcher shop, recall Bill Weishoppel, the president of Walton Wild. It was there that he first thought up the idea for his feed mechanism. So the company took their inventory of unsold paper shredders, put them in boxes labeled artisanal meat grinders and salami slicers. They started demonstrating the machines at organic restaurants and groceries all across the country, and sales have been through the roof. One place in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, keeps its machine running 24/7, making a specialty, organic beef confetti tartare. And for the vegetarians out there, the company's also offering state-of-the-art lettuce shredders.
Paper shredders turned to food and meat shredders to save a town in Wisconsin. Your next story about the consequences of the digital age comes from Brian Babylon.
Every year, the American Psychological Association releases a new edition of its journal on psychological disorders. And this year, they've made an addition. The journal now includes something called acute oversharing disorder, also known as Kardashian disease. According to the journal, this disorder affects 2.3 million Americans every year. Doctors and psychiatrists blame smartphones and everything on the internet. Symptoms of AOD include using idiotic acronyms like LOL or ROLFL instead of actual laughter, thinking it's okay to describe your baby's bowel movements in graphic detail during important business meetings, taking pictures of your food and showing it to your date who is sitting across from you in the restaurant. One AOD patient told reporters, "When my doctor told me I had something called Kardashian disease, I naturally assumed it was an STD. I was so relieved to hear I just had a crippling psychological disorder."
Acute oversharing disorder, the disease of the new digital age. Your last sad tale of these modern times comes from Faith Saley.
Yeah, your smartphone is pretty awesome. It can scan business cards, start your car, and monitor your baby all day long without your nanny even knowing. But can your dog poop on it? That's why you should never underestimate the power of print. For years, with the rise of smartphones, iPads, and laptops, print newspapers have not been getting their due. Now they're getting their doo-doo. A shortage of newspapers has meant that puppies at the San Francisco Animal Control Agency have been in danger of having nothing on which to poop. But now, the San Francisco Public Library is saving the day by donating old newspapers to line doggy cages. This is a real journalistic scoop. This week, the library filled an animal control van with two 32-gallon recycling bins full of newspapers. The only potential critics of this contribution are the Bay Area's second-grade teachers who fear a generation of children will grow up without paper mache.
All righty, then. Here are your choices. One of these is a true story of an unintended repercussion of the digital age. Is it from Charlie Pierce? A shredder company goes almost out of business but repurposes itself as a meat shredder. From Brian Babylon, a new disease, acute oversharing disorder, defined by the American Psychological Association. Or from Faith, and a terrible shortage of paper for the paper training of puppies in San Francisco. Which of these is the real story?
I'm going to have to go with the paper shredder story.
The paper shredder story, Charlie's story.
Yep.
About the small town in Wisconsin, which almost went under because their paper shredder company could not make any more sales.
Yeah, that's the one.
All right, well, we spoke to somebody who knew something about this story.
The animal shelter has always relied on newspaper donations from the public, but those are becoming less dependable as fewer people get their newspapers delivered.
That was Neil J. Riley, the reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who writes about City Hall and now other things. So I'm afraid, no, you were fooled by Charlie, as so many have been over the years. It turns out, of course, that Faith had the real story. So I'm afraid you didn't win the game, but you did earn a point for Charlie.
Thank you, Brenna.
Thanks
Good.
For playing.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
No more dogging, playing around with you. No more dogging, fooling around with you. Gonna let you out, baby. That's what I'll have to do.
And now the game where we ask people who've done amazing things to do something rather mundane. In 1992, Dr. Mae Jemison became the first African-American woman in space when she flew as a science mission specialist on the space shuttle Endeavour. A short while later, she served as a transporter engineer on the Starship Enterprise. Guess which one I think is cooler? Dr. Jemison, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Wow. So you have done a lot of remarkable things, a Stanford graduate, a medical doctor, a teacher, a professor at Dartmouth, and an astronaut. And
yeah.
We've read that you say two things got you into science, Star Trek and pus.
Yes.
Could you explain the influence pus had on you?
Pus is one of the neatest things ever, right? When I was a little girl, I got a splinter stuck in my thumb and it got infected, pus came out of it. My mother told me to go look it up, and then I found out it has all these really cool things in it. It's just the most fascinating thing that your body could do. It's the way around, that's the way we, I don't know, I thought it was cool.
So, I mean, it's interesting that, and with people's reaction to your fascination with pus to be like, wow, May, someday you're going to be an astronaut. Or was it like, you're an odd little girl?
Well, that wasn't the oddest thing I did. I mean, I made mud pies. I had the whole full science scope going. I pus, mud pies, dance, you know.
Wait a minute. It sounds like a typical girlhood. Pus, mud pies, dance, sure. and you were a big, well, I don't know if I can use this word with somebody who was on People Magazine's 50 Most Beautiful People in the World, but a science fiction geek growing up.
I was a science fiction geek. That lets you know that it come in all sizes and styles,
wow.
Right?
Wow. So you were like Star Trek, the original series, was it?
I was the original series Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. And so when you finally got him into space on the Endeavour in 1992, were you disappointed in what it was actually like? I mean, the doors don't go whoosh. And there's no cool cafeteria, and there are a few Vulcans. I mean,
No tribbles.
No. It was very exciting because, first of all, you have an opportunity to see the Earth, and it's absolutely amazing. And I remember one time, actually, we flew through the southern lights. You know, they're like the northern lights, and there were this shimmering curtains of light. So there's nothing that you could have ever seen in a science fiction movie that we even come close to seeing that.
Wow.
In person. Absolutely stunning. And for me, it was really a childhood dream coming true. It's sort of where the fantasy led reality, and then I got to be on the Starship Enterprise anyway. And the cool thing was is I was the only person on the bridge who had actually been in the space.
Well, hang on. So the way it worked was you came down from orbit on the Endeavour, and then they got in touch with you. They were producing Star Trek: The Next Generation, right?
Yeah.
And they got in touch with you. They said, "Would you like to come be in the crew here?"
Asked me if I would consider doing an episode. Someone heard that I really like Star Trek, and they found out whether I'd be interested in doing an episode. And I said, "Absolutely."
You know, hey man, this is Brian Babylon. First of all,
yes.
I'm a big, very big fan. Thank you for talking to me. I don't know. I'm a big Trekkie, too, but the first astronaut that I got caught up in was Major Anthony Nelson from I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah.
That was an astronaut. I mean, how...
Square-jawed.
Yeah.
I watched I Dream of Jeannie as well.
So, I mean, how close, you know, I know you didn't have a genie, but was it sort of like that at all?
Did you have madcap adventures with your magical companion?
I could not tell you if I did.
I understand. So I can only imagine that you were, I mean, I would do this. If I was the only person who had ever actually been to space on the set of the Star Trek TV series, I'd be like, you know, in real space, it wouldn't be like that at all. Real space, you blew your nose, it would just float all around here. I would lord it over those actors like you wouldn't believe it. What'd you do?
I just wanted to meet Worf.
Oh, who doesn't? But he's awesome.
So, yeah. May, how many, when you were in space, how many days consecutively were you up there?
I was up 8 days.
And you are a dancer. Did you dance?
I absolutely did. The incredible thing about being in space is you have this incredible ability that you can keep spinning and spinning, and you can, you know, it's really phenomenal.
Did you do the moonwalk? I mean, you would have to do the moonwalk.
You know, you can't. You have to actually be weighted to something to do the moonwalk. You
That's
know?
A problem.
And in space, do astronauts really eat the freeze-dried ice cream, or is that just something they tell you when you go to the Smithsonian?
I think it sells things really well.
Understand. So you're telling me that Dippin' Dots is not really the space-age ice cream?
Well, Dippin' Dots wasn't even around back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no Dippin' Dots, because you have to have a freezer. I think on Space Station they have freezers. They have a little bit more different types of food that you carried up on the shuttle, but that's a lot of energy.
Everybody, I mean, basically, if you've seen all these science fiction movies, and Star Trek is just cool, you're flying around everywhere, and 2001 is sort of beautiful and graceful until the computer tries to kill you. I'm imagining that in real life it's a lot more mundane out there. What's like the most uncomfortable thing about being in space?
Laying on your back on the launch pad and having to use your diaper.
Really?
What?
Oh, yeah, we heard about the diapers when that lady drove across the country and didn't want to stop. I remember about the diaper. So talk to me about this project you're working on, which is this 100-year starship. And this is an organization trying to point the way toward long-distance space travel.
Well, it is very seriously. 100-year starship really is about the idea that if we pursue an extraordinary tomorrow, we'll build a better world today. So all the things that we need to do a successful interstellar mission are the things that we need to live successfully here on Earth. So we talk about energy, we can talk about recycling, closed environmental life support systems, but there's one thing I want to bring up that sometimes people don't think about when
sure.
they think about space, and that's how we interact with one another.
Oh, sure.
So imagine being with your panel for 100 years on a ship.
Excuse me?
Yeah, right.
So, I'd be pretty popular.
I don't know. After 100 years, you'd all look pretty attractive to me. Isn't it true? I read about this, that they're thinking about missions to Mars now, and they think we might be able to get people to Mars, but we couldn't get them back. So you need to find people who are willing to go and never come back. Is that true?
I'm sure there are people who want to do that, and I'm sure there are people that we would volunteer.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure. Yes, exactly. I have a job for you, my friend. Well, Dr. Mae Jemison, we're delighted to talk to you, and we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Excuse me? When do we get to the Southwest Terminal?
You've flown in the space shuttle, so we thought we'd ask you three questions about a sometimes more unpredictable vehicle, the airport shuttle. Answer two of these questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on the home answering machine. Carl, who is Dr. Jemison playing for?
She's playing for Abby Zinberg of Northbrook, Illinois.
Ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Here's your first question. At the Dusseldorf Airport in Germany, a family called for the shuttle to take them back to their car and got a surprise. Was it A, the driver was infamous terrorist Carlos the Jackal working his day job? B, the shuttle was their own car with shuttle company signs pasted onto it? Or C, the driver then followed a malfunctioning GPS and drove them all the way to Paris?
I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C.
Malfunctioning GPS.
So they're in Dusseldorf, Germany. And say 3 hours later, they're like, did we park this far away?
That's where I'm going, because, you know, people sort of look at that GPS and they keep going because they're sure it's correct.
Yeah, how could it lie to you? It's
exactly.
A computer, right?
It's a computer. It doesn't lie.
Well, no, in this case, the answer was B. While they were away, the shuttle company took their car, put magnetized shuttle company signs on it, and used it as a shuttle. And the shuttle company said, oh, no, this was just a mistake we made today, but it turns out it had 400 kilometers extra on it, so no, they had been doing it. All right, you still have two more chances. Not a problem for some
okay.
of your abilities.
All right.
Last year, also, a shuttle bus was the scene of a strange crime in Barcelona, Spain. What happened? A, the shuttle was used as a getaway car after a robbery. B, the driver of the shuttle bus set up a small brothel with velvet curtains and satin sheets in the back of the bus. Or C, a thief hid in a suitcase and rifled through the other suitcases while the bus was in motion.
A brothel... A thief going through suitcases, yeah. And the first one?
Used as a getaway car, I believe, after the robbery of an ice cream stand.
I'm going with C again.
C again, the thief hid in the suitcase?
The thief in the suitcase.
You're right, that's what happened. We covered it on the show when it did. Was it a dwarf? Guy packs his friend into a suitcase, puts it in the luggage compartment. They get on the shuttle bus while they're driving. The guy gets out of the luggage, rifles through the other luggage, steals stuff. And he was caught because as the trip ended, other passengers saw this guy talking to his own luggage. Like, how'd it go? And so they figured out something was up. So, all right, this is great. Doctor, you have one more chance. You can do it. In 1995 in Rhode Island, a woman with no criminal record stole an airport shuttle and tried to drive it down the highway. What reason did she give? A, she saw the words park and fly on it and thought it was a really valuable flying car. B, she thought the vehicle was, quote, dead sexy. Or C, she had a fight with her husband while visiting the in-laws and really wanted to go home.
You know... Let's just stay with C, because, you know, when you have that fight with the in-laws and the husband, you just really want to leave.
You know you're right, and you are.
Wow.
That was an answer that sounded from some experience. She was visiting her in-laws with her family. She had a huge fight with her husband. She's like, that's it, I'm going home. She goes to the airport. They say, I'm sorry, we have no flights back to Mission. She goes, fine, jumps in an airport shuttle and takes out for the territories. They caught her in a few miles. Carl, how did Dr. Mae Jemison do in our quiz?
Dr. Jemison, you had two correct answers, and that wins for Abby Zinberg.
Well done.
That's great, Peter, because I had 40 quatloos on that.
Oh, that's great. Dr. Mae Jemison was the science officer in NASA's 1992 Endeavor mission. Today she leads the 100-year Starship. Dr. Jemison, thank you so much for joining us today. Great to talk to you. One toke over the line with Snoop Dogg. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, an Allstate company, offering Coverage Counselor, an online tool that provides car insurance options based on users' needs at eSurance.com. The Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture, poetryfoundation.org, and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring with a Floor Finder app for iPad and iPhone. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Faith Saley, Charlie Pierce, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much, Carl. In just a minute, Carl bets the house on the San Francisco 40 Rhymers in the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Charlie, this month, the department store Nordstrom named a new chief marketing officer. And in his first week on the job, he inquired about the security at their corporate headquarters. Apparently, he's afraid somebody might break into the building and do what to him?
Steal him.
No.
No?
No.
Hire him away to Macy's.
No. He should have just made his new office base.
What, tag him and say he was it?
Exactly right.
What?
Tag, it's not just one of Mitt Romney's weird kids' names. The Wall Street Journal did a story about the Nordstrom, the new Nordstrom CMO, and nine of his friends. They have been playing a single continuous game of tag for 23 years. It started when they were in high school. They revived the tradition several years later, and when one of the players, a lawyer, drew up a contract, they all signed a tag participation agreement. The game is live for the month of February every year. Whoever's it on March 1st has to suffer the indignity the rest of the year. So they spend February trying to find each other and tag each other.
Man.
Wherever they are in the world.
I'm a little one percenter games?
Yeah, well, no, I mean... these guys, you know, they met in high school, so they've all gone into different walks of life. For example, one of the players at one point flew into his teammate's or opponent's town, made a deal with the guy's wife to hide in the trunk, right, of the guy's car. The guy comes out, opens the trunk of the car, he jumps out, tags the guy, says, "Tag, you're it." And one of the rules in the contract, no tag backs, right? And he's like, it was such a surprise leaping out of the trunk that the woman stumbled backwards, tore a ligament in her knee, had to have surgery. And the guy's like, "I feel bad about that, but I still got him. That man is a priest."
Man, wow.
The fact these men spend all this time playing a pointless game is ridiculous, said an unnamed CEO who was busy using a metal stick to drive a tiny white ball into a hole. Brian, more and more offices are installing active workstations for their employees. You know, cubicles with a treadmill under the desk or balance balls in place of chairs. While it's great for workplace health, it's bad for what?
The budget?
No.
People are just not doing their work
effectively. Exactly. Bad for getting work done.
It's concentration, productivity.
Precisely right. It's hard to stay in shape at your job. We know this. Just look at the people in your cubicle farm or any professional baseball team. But active workstations have their price. The Wall Street Journal reports that workers tested on treadmills make more typos and get worse at crucial skills like mouse clicking and not falling onto their faces and being thrown backwards into the cubicle wall. So you'll know.
What does that mean? A treadmill desk?
A treadmill desk is a desk that has a treadmill built into it on the ground.
Are you sitting down going like...
No, you stand on the treadmill and you walk while you work.
That sounds like some stuff that happened... Remember when the internet was all big and those companies were popping up and they were having like tents and nap rooms and all that stupid stuff?
And now the internet's not big anymore.
Yeah.
They do say that you are... something like 75% more creative when you're in motion.
That's what they say.
So maybe you're not efficient and you're making typos, but
you're thinking.
Yeah, that's like called smoking weed too. Like I can sit at my desk and smoke. Yeah, like, oh man, this is amazing. I'm creative. Yeah.
Charlie, the fast food chain Subway has apologized and is now making changes after admitting that their footlong sandwiches are actually what?
Overcompensation. Not a foot long.
Exactly, only 11 inches long. This is a big deal. Earlier this month, an Australian man posted a photo of his alleged foot-long Subway sandwich with measuring tape, proving it came up about an inch short. At first, Subway denied it. They said that their sandwiches really are 12 inches long. It was just cold out that day.
Subway said, it's not you. This has never happened before.
No.
This is why...
That's okay, Subway. It happens to everyone.
And then Subway said, "Can I just hold you?"
What's this called?
I like eating soup. sandwiches, eating sandwiches for lunch and dinner. There are so many chances to eat a good sandwich.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's a game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian offer some baseball advice from a Supreme Court justice. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, this is Tim from Brooklyn, New York.
Hey, how are things in Brooklyn?
It's a little cold and windy today.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, it's like that there in Brooklyn. What do you do there?
I work for TV network, actually.
You work for a TV network?
No, I don't know the rules about this, but I work for Showtime.
Oh, you do?
Yes, sir.
Do you get to see all the shows for free?
Unfortunately, I pay for cable.
No, really?
Yeah.
That's no fun.
Yep.
Well, welcome to our show, Tim. You're going to play the game in which Carl will read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to play?
All set.
Here we go. Here's your first limerick.
This librarian has a new role. The stacks I no longer patrol. The patrons all flip as they check out my strip. I'm dancing and working the...
Ooh.
Mm. Strip, dancing...
Think Nickelback music.
Yeah, if you...
Rhymes with roll, patrol, how about...
If you worked for Cinemax, you'd get this.
Yeah.
No idea.
It's Pole.
Oh!
Pole. Mayfield Public Library in Scotland is hoping to attract new membership and interest in the library by offering a free pole dancing class this weekend during an event called Love Your Library Day. Also known as the only way we could get men who aren't homeless into the library day.
But you're laughing, man. Pole workouts get you nice and muscular up top. I mean, even if you're a guy.
If you pay an extra $50, does a librarian take you into, like, nonfiction privately? Or
Here we go. You still have two more chances. Let's see if we can get it. Here's your next limerick.
Snoop Lion's not hanging with thugs. He mentors young kids who need hugs. He's sowing some seeds with his knowledge of weed. He's teaching those kids about...
Grub?
Grub?
Shrub?
Not shrubs.
Shrubs.
Although that would be nice if Snoop Lion to teach them about shrubbery. Snoop Lion, by the way, Snoop Lion used to be known as Snoop Dogg, remember? All right, let's hear it one more time.
Well, you know, in my community, they call shrubs.
Yeah, I understand. All right. Here we go. One more time. You'll get it.
Snoop Lion's not hanging with thugs. He mentors young kids who need hugs. He's sowing some seeds with his knowledge of weed. He's teaching these kids about...
Bud?
He's just trying to get Carl to talk about this more.
Well, you got the rhyme right. But no, it's not bugs.
And it's still not shrubs.
Yeah. Sowing some seeds, knowledge of weed.
I mean, just Snoop Dogg.
I mean,
come on.
Any thoughts on this?
Just say no.
Yeah. All right. What do you think?
This is on me.
Yeah, it's on me. Tim, it's all on you. We're waiting one more stab at it. What do you think?
I'm out of guesses on this one.
How about drugs, Tim? How about drugs?
Well, thanks. He's already done so.
Yeah. The artist formerly known as Snoop Dogg, now known as Snoop Lion, is penning a children's book called It's Just a Plant, A Children's Story of Marijuana. Before you jump to the conclusion that Snoop is condoning pot use among kids, let me assure you that is exactly what he is doing. The plot of the book, and this is true, is about a little girl who learns about the wonders of Mary Jane, and instead of ending happily ever after, the book segues into the very, very hungry caterpillar. All right, one more limerick for you. Here we go.
I can't handle a world full of maybes.
Rabid dogs need to smell just like rabies. And when something's good, pump it up if you would. I want infants to smell more like
babies.
Yes, baby. Yeah. Nailed that one. Dolce & Gabbana has introduced its first ever perfume for babies. The scent is inspired by, quote, the softness of baby skin, the freshness of baby's breath. That's right, you're buying perfume for your baby so he can smell the way he's supposed to by being a baby. Carl, how did Tim do?
Well, he needed two correct answers to win, but he had just one correct answer.
Oh, Tim.
It was fun, though.
It was fun to have you.
He brought it on himself.
It was great to talk to you, Tim.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for playing.
Have a good one.
Time to roll on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Charlie Pierce has the lead. Peter, he has 4 points. Faith Saley has 3. Brian Babylon has 2.
Brian, you're in third place. You are up first. Here we go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank.
Yes.
Testifying this week, former Representative Gabby Giffords called for Congress to take action on blank.
Automatic weapons.
Well, guns.
Gun
yes.
control, yes.
The confirmation hearing for Chuck Hagel, President Obama's choice to head the Department of Blank, began on Thursday.
Defense.
Right. As French forces continued to battle Islamic rebels, the President of Blank announced that elections would be held in July.
Mali.
Right. Las Vegas police got some unexpected help making their case against the suspected pimp when they discovered Blank.
Big hats and minks?
No. That he had a tattoo of the word pimp. Best known for his television role as Gomer Pyle, this week Blank announced he'd married his male partner of 38 years.
Jim Neighbors.
He did. So a Tennessee woman got into a head-on collision with a deputy's cruiser, ran it off the road, led police on a 10-minute high-speed chase, and then crashed her car all without blanking.
Being awake.
No. She did all of that without spilling her beer.
My kind of lady.
Trisha Moody knows how to hold her liquor, as she demonstrated after this week's high-speed police chase. Moody, who did not spill a drop of her 16-ounce beverage, was charged with a DUI for the incident, but has reportedly received offers from the new Budweiser Cirque du Soleil tour, L'Alcoholique. Carl, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 10 points, and Brian has taken the lead.
All right. Yes. All right. Yes, 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 yes. Brian. All right, Faith. Faith, you're up next. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, Beyonce said she would absolutely be singing live at the blank.
Super Bowl.
Right. On Monday, the Boy Scouts of America announced that they are considering lifting their ban on blank.
Gays.
Yes. Syria formally complained to the United Nations on Thursday over a reported attack by blank within its borders.
Israel.
Right. Flights were canceled and over 100 factories were temporarily shut down this weekend in an attempt to reduce the smog in blank.
China.
Somewhere, specifically?
Beijing.
Yes. A police officer who found a missing alpaca in New Zealand earned praise for immediately blanking.
Killing it.
No! Putting it in the back seat of his patrol car and giving it a ride home. Patty Andrews, the last surviving member of the World War II-era singing group Blank, died at age 94.
Andrews sisters.
Yes. On Monday, Catherine Applegate and John Klassen were awarded the Newbery and Caldecott medals, which honor excellence in Blank.
Children's literature.
Yes. Lawmakers in Kerry County, Ireland, have passed a motion allowing residents to drive Blank.
To drive... something unusual, not a shamrock, but a sheep.
No, it allows them to drive while moderately drunk. According to the resolution, if it passes, you can get a permit that will allow you to have 3 pints of beer and still swerve gently and lightly crash on the way home without fear of arrest. It'll be up to the cops to determine what counts as moderately drunk, so they're scrambling to update the sobriety tests. Sir, please sway forward. Don't bother touching your nose. Just tell me where you think it is. List whatever numbers you can think of. Carl, how did Faith do in our quiz?
Faith had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Faith has taken the lead.
All right. So, how many does Charlie Pierce need to win?
6.
All right, Charlie. Here we go. This is for the game. This week, Iran announced that it successfully launched a live blank into space and brought it back alive.
A monkey.
Yes, on Thursday, the Senate passed a short-term resolution extending the blank until May.
The debt ceiling.
Right. Last Sunday, new rules kicked in allowing stores to charge a fee to customers who pay with a blank.
Credit card.
Yes. On Tuesday, Transportation Secretary Blank announced he would be stepping down.
Ray LaHood.
Yes. Police in Florida arrested a man they overheard making a drug deal after he accidentally blanked.
Butt-dialed them.
Yes, he butt-dialed 911. On Wednesday, Research in Motion announced the launch of the new blank phone.
iPhone.
No, the BlackBerry. On Wednesday, Prince Charles and his wife Camilla blanked for the first time since 1986.
They appeared in public.
No, they rode on the tube, the London Underground. Oh. A fisherman in Panama was excited to hook a huge marlin, but was less excited when blank.
When sharks ate it on the way as he rode back into Cuba.
No. What happened was the marlin sunk his boat. The captain and his crew were rescued, and the marlin is now posing for photos with his brand new fishing boat on the ocean floor. And you know he's lying about it down there. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He needed 6 correct answers, but Charlie had just 5 correct answers. So with 15 points, Faith Saley is this week's champion.
Well done, Faith. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict what Super Bowl ad will everyone be talking about on Monday. But first, let me tell you all that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. And Ancestry.com, providing online genealogy tools for solving the puzzles of family history. Learn more at tryancestry.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman is our benevolent overlord. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Volunteer wrangler is Ray Teresi. Our intern is Miles Something's Knocking at the Dornboss. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchick and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Roberta Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillag, and the executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is, yes, you know the answer, let's say it together, Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the big Super Bowl ad on Sunday? Brian Babylon.
All right, this new Star Wars trailer premieres with a dud with Jar Jar Binks Reloaded.
Ooh. Charlie Pierce.
Actually, it's going to be the revival of an old Apple commercial in which thousands of blank-eyed people march in steady procession up a hill towards the giant head of Joe Biden.
And Faith Saley.
In another Halftime for America ad, Clint Eastwood talks to an empty driver's seat of a Chrysler.
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Brian Babylon, Charlie Pierce, and Faith Saley. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thankful that you do. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week in Dallas, Texas. Is NPR. Thank you.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.